every time I put my foot down and stand up for myself, it's like, we've heard about Nicki Minaj. But when you're a girl, you have to be like everything. You have to be dope at what you do, but you have to be super sweet, and you have to be sexy, and you have to be this, and you have to be that, and you have to be nice, and you have to... It's like, I can't be all those things at once.
Happy Friday, Misfits. On today's episode, we're discussing Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud by our queen and champion, Anne Helen Peterson. We kick off this episode with some fun book news about the Harry Potter universe before jumping into the deep end of the feminist swimming pool. And guys, we've got thoughts. So grab your favorite drink and get ready to crush the patriarchy, because it's time to get this party started. Welcome to the Misfit Book Club, a podcast for readers, weirdos, blue stockings, normals, scribbling women, screwballs, and anyone who's too fat, too slutty, and too loud. I'm Maria Blackheart, and I'm here with my co-host, Pixie Berger.
Hey, Maria.
How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Good.
It occurred to me that we have survived 1 year of Trump.
I didn't think that was going to happen.
I didn't either. At least we've survived a year since his election.
I had truly believed he'd be impeached by this point.
I thought we would have entered into a world war. So, like, I think we're doing pretty well. I'm not exactly optimistic for the future, but we're better off than I expected. Just because nobody can get their shit together up there and do anything. So there's something to be said for that. It's just a circus.
It's like the... What is it? The Mariana Trench. It just keeps going down and down and down.
Yeah. So, yeah, we survived a year since the election. This book brought up a whole bunch of the trauma. Well, not real trauma, but, you know, the bad memories of that day because of the Hillary Clinton chapter. But we'll talk about that later. So in other news, I finished Stranger Things.
Oh, good.
And loved it so hard. And... Okay, guys, full disclosure, this episode is going to have an R rating on it anyway because of the subject matter. But I finished Stranger Things 2 a few days after everybody else. And then a couple of nights ago, I went to sleep and I had the most phenomenal sex dream about Hopper. Perhaps the best sex dream I've ever had in my entire life. And not just about the actor David Harbour, like, Hopper was the person in the dream.
Yeah.
So it was a really good dream. And it was especially good because it was like an actual story. Like there was a narrative involved and costume changes. And it was really good. I'll just say that much.
What is it about Hopper that you find attractive?
I think, well, in my dream, he was helping me like find a lost family member, you know? So like he was... we were going through all these dangerous places together and he was like being very brave and selfless, which is what he is in the show. I mean, he has probably a rage problem as well, which that did not show up in the dream.
Good. I mean, I get it. And that rage adds like a little bit of danger.
Something is wrong with me.
No, I don't think so.
But it was really good. And Hopper, if you're out there, Instagram us at Misfit Book Club.
Get in touch with Pixie. She has a proposition for you. Oh, that's so funny.
Dark confessions from the Misfit Book Club.
Actually, that leads me into what I've been doing, which is watching Westworld, which has like lots of sex in it.
So much sex.
Very attractive robots.
Yep.
I started watching Westworld because we read Jurassic Park. And I was like, oh, this was fun.
Well, and I told you you would love it.
And I was like, yeah, I'll watch it. And then promptly didn't watch it. I love you.
I love you too.
So anyway, I started watching it and it's fantastic. It brings up some really hard questions, not just about like AI, which a bunch of people think is going to kill us anyway.
Right.
But about like, when do creations start having rights?
Mm-hmm. Right. And when does the creator have obligation toward the thing that he or she has created? It's pretty deep. It's a pretty deep show.
I've been having like theological crises
Mm-hmm. Right about 11 p.m. every night. Maybe that's why I'm tired today.
Maybe,
who knows?
Maybe. I'm sitting in the closet drinking again, and I'm wearing a Snuggie, but I gotta take off the Snuggie after talking about that dream about Hopper. I'm like getting hot. It's pretty sad.
Look at what we do for all of you. We sacrifice our bodies. We sacrifice our dignity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently wearing a pair of pants with flaming eight balls on them that I've had since, I think, high school. Hopper would love me in this. Sorry, Pixie. I mean, he'd look at you and then he'd be like, look at Maria. Look at that outfit.
I know that's true. That. I know that's absolutely true.
I'm wearing a Goody headband to keep my bangs out of my face. Mm.
What else is going on?
I had the weirdest goddamn massage of my whole life.
Ooh, do tell.
Okay, so I've had back problems for a really long time, and I would go get massages. Well, the lady who always worked on my back, she went back to school. She's not doing it anymore. So I've been trying to find a new massage therapist. So I got this wild hair that I was going to look on Thumbtack to try and find a massage therapist.
I don't know what Thumbtack is.
Okay, Thumbtack is like where sort of like business owners, like small business owners can post their services locally.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's cool. So I was like, I'm going to see if I can find a massage therapist this way. So I do it and this lady responds and she was like, oh, I'll do an hour massage for like $45. I was like, sweet. Yes, I'll do this. Well, I probably should have started worrying at that point, but I didn't. So she's like, well, you've got to come to my house. And I was like, okay, that's fine. So she didn't send me her address until the day of. And I realize it's in a not so good part of town. And I'm like, whatever. I'm sure it's fine. So I like pull up and it's not a house. It's an apartment. The whole front of the apartment outside the door is like stacked up with junk.
This does not sound good at all.
No. So I'm like, for a second, I was like, maybe I can just not do this. And I was like, no, Maria, I'm sure it's fine. And so I knock on the door. She opens it. I don't know about you, but if I were having clients in my home, I would like clean my house. This place is like hoarder central. It smells like old litter box. I was like, no, what have I done?
And you went through with it?
I did. I didn't know how not to.
Oh, my gosh. I would have said, I'm so sorry. I just wanted to come over and tell you I had a thing come up. I got to go. Bye.
Well, see, that is what a smart person would do. I felt like I'd made a commitment that I couldn't back out of. So she leads me into this like back windowless bedroom where her massage table is. And that was actually fine. But she was weird. The whole thing was weird. It was totally awful. And it was the least relaxing massage I've ever had in my whole life because I kept waiting for the feeling of a knife plunging into my back.
Oh, no.
And of course, I told no one where I was going.
Listeners, learn from Maria's mistakes.
Don't do it. Like,
note to self, like, look up Thumbtack, but don't find a massage therapist on Thumbtack.
No, find a painter.
Yeah.
To paint your house. Like, that's fine. But yeah, don't go to somebody's house for a massage. Don't go to a stranger's house for a massage. Even saying it out loud right now, it's like a bad idea, right?
Yeah.
But at the time, it seems so good.
I think we've all learned from this experience. So thank you for sharing it, Maria.
You're welcome. Once I went to the windowless room, I was like, I'm dead.
Okay.
They're going to find my body shoved ingloriously into a trash can somewhere.
I think I'm going to get one of those like wearable jewelry GPS locators for you for Christmas. That might be your Christmas present. So that like if you're having a panic, you can just like punch the button and we'll know, Maria, we need to save her.
You want to know a true story?
Yes.
That's why all of my jackets are bright colored, is I've been known to wander off in crowds, and it's a good way for people to find me when I'm lost. I'm over 30.
Amazing.
Oh, my God. Should we move into book news?
Yes, we okay. Probably should.
All right. So book news this week. What have we got? Oh, can I start?
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Please.
All right. The company that made Pokemon Go is making another game that's Harry Potter based. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be so much fun. And the company said that players will learn spells, explore their real world neighborhoods and cities to discover and fight legendary beasts and team up with others to take down powerful enemies. And it's going to be called Harry Potter Wizards Unite.
So fun. You know I'd be down for that.
I'm already down for that.
Love it.
Okay, also, Alias Grace by Margaret Atwood just came out on Netflix. Well, Alias Grace is the book by Margaret Atwood, and then the TV show inspired by Alias Grace just came out on Netflix. And it's getting great reviews. We are in the height of TV.
How
exciting.
It is a golden age of television, which makes Jonathan Franzen's comment about television even the more irrelevant, because he's wrong.
Oh, we're going to talk about him.
I guess he was talking in the 90s, but like...
Doesn't matter.
20 years later, like, he's definitely wrong.
Right? Like, The Handmaid's Tale.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Stranger Things. Game of Thrones. Westworld.
Oh, yeah. Like, Mad Men is over, but mm-hmm. was amazing. Breaking Bad, mm-hmm. same. It's a really good time for TV. I haven't mm-hmm. watched Alias Grace yet, but it is definitely on my list. So I'm looking forward to that. That looks really good.
Yeah, because I still haven't watched The Handmaid's Tale because I don't have Hulu. I need a tracking bracelet and a Hulu account.
I don't have a lot of book news this week. I've been kind of wrapped up with my own stuff, but I was reading Publisher's Lunch today and they had a note in there about Sean Penn publishing a novel, and it has the worst title ever. It's Bob Honey Who Just Do Stuff.
I already can't with it.
Yeah, it's a novella, and the blurb on it, I think it's going on sale in March, is by Bill Maher. It's basically, to me, the summary made it sound like John Wick, but boring.
Well, I'm kind of bummed the blurb wasn't by El Chapo, since they're like besties.
If only. That would have been a little more interesting, I guess. But
right.
So yeah, I just gave you the most boring piece of publishing book news.
There wasn't a lot this week.
Should we talk about Too Fat, Too Slutty, and Too Loud?
Yay. I'm so excited. So what did you think of the book?
It was as good as I expected. This kind of writing is just totally in my wheelhouse. The mm-hmm. topics of pop culture filtered through a intelligent lens. Oh my gosh, I loved it. And I learned a lot. And the thing that I love about Anne Helen is that she does talk about some heady stuff, but she does it in a way that doesn't feel like she's talking down at you. And also, it's instructive, too. So I learned a lot from these chapters, and I reevaluated my opinions of people. I definitely went and watched a bunch of YouTube videos and looked up a bunch of pictures because I wanted to supplement my reading with some images. So I loved it. I had a great time reading this book. How about you?
I learned so much. My book is pretty much all highlighter.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to highlight the whole book. Yeah, I feel like we could be really good friends with Anne Helen Peterson.
I think we could. Yeah.
So I loved it. I loved it. I think it was a fast read.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the points were really not only interesting, but had a great fresh perspective on them. And right about the time I felt like the book was getting a little too like academic, it came back right around and did something really cool.
Right.
So I just loved it. 5 stars for me.
Totally. I love how she comes at it from the perspective of reaction. Like, she's mm-hmm. interested in the people that she's writing about, obviously, but she's just as interested in public, popular reactions to those people. Mm-hmm. And that is extremely telling. And the stuff that I thought I wouldn't enjoy, I wound up enjoying. And mm-hmm. it was mostly just because I was ignorant about those people.
I agree.
Did you have some favorite chapters?
I did. The Nicki Minaj chapter was my favorite of the whole
so
book.
So good. I loved it.
And I know I knew almost nothing about Nicki Minaj coming in, right? Like, she just wasn't somebody on my radar outside of Anaconda.
right.
I love that song. And I hadn't seen the music video. So I went back and watched the music video and I was like, okay. This is cool, but I loved, loved, loved that chapter. I think it's everything good about the book. It has fantastic insights about someone you might not otherwise think a lot about. It gives you the history of a piece of feminism that you might not know a lot about. In this case, female rappers, which asked me how much I knew about female rappers, like 0.
Right.
And then at the end, brought it into the big picture. Like, what does Nicki Minaj and her action have to do with you? Well, she refuses to let her career be in the hands of a man. She wants to not only compete on a level playing field, she wants to be the best in a level playing field. I like that a lot.
I loved that chapter too. And what I took away from it is that Nicki Minaj is an extremely hardworking woman and she's a micromanager. And I kind of love that every single thing she has to see it, approve it. Like, it's her brand, it's her body, it's her business. Like, she is in charge and she asserts that control in a really masterful way. I definitely went and watched the Anaconda video again, like 10 times.
It's so good.
It just reinforced my awe for the twerk.
Like, that was one thing that I think Anne Helen missed. And so at one point, Anne Helen mentions that men who are rappers have these very specific kind of music videos that they're in. They are surrounded by basically naked women who are fawning over them. I think Anaconda does two really cool things. One, it puts Nicki in that position. Like, people freaked out about her being surrounded by women. Well, it's because she's doing the exact same thing that the men are doing, right? She's clearly co-opting that. But also, Anaconda is a song about her having female sexual power. I mean, that's the Sir Mix-a-Lot joke, right? I love Baby Got Back, but it's all about objectifying women. And Anaconda is all about Nicki's power in her life.
I think, isn't Drake at the end the only man in the video?
He is.
Yeah. So the bulk of it is all these women having a great time.
Right. And controlling the phallus. I mean, this may be getting a little deep, right? But like, that's why people freaked out about Britney Spears having the snake at the VMAs all those many years ago.
Right.
Is because snakes, guns, all of those things are phallic power. And all that means is it's like the metaphorical stand-in for the penis. So she, I'm not trying to giggle. It's been a long day. This episode is definitely getting an explicit rating. But anyway, a phallus is just a symbol of masculine power. And when women hold that symbol, it tends to make people really, really uncomfortable. And that is what Nicki's playing with. Is this idea of her occupying the role that a male rapper would occupy. And it's awesome.
Right.
And so I have a quote, and Anne Helen writes, "Nicki bursts through the glossy veneer of the celebrity industrial complex, wrests control of the narrative, calls bullshit on the rhetoric and mechanisms that would frame her as unruly, acting out, overly aggressive. Because Minaj is not, in fact, too slutty, or too rude, or too weird, or too manipulative. She simply has something that's long been inaccessible for female celebrities, and black ones in particular, total control." That's a mic drop.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I loved
it, too. The Nicki Minaj chapter was absolutely my favorite of the whole book.
It was really good. One of the chapters that I expected to like, but not as much as I did, was the Jennifer Weiner chapter.
Oh, yeah?
About books. Yeah, because that's just so relevant to so much of what we say on this podcast. I've never read a Jennifer Weiner novel, but I've definitely heard of her. I've seen her on Twitter. So it was a really informative one for me, too.
Yeah, and so Jennifer Weiner is an author. She writes chick lit. And Anne Helen Peterson labeled her too loud. So she's the too loud in the title. Nicki Minaj was too slutty. The point of this chapter is that Jennifer Weiner basically has been on a crusade trying to get chick lit to be respected. And so chick lit are those books that are typically written by women that star female characters doing things that women do.
Right. And the term chick lit is really controversial, too. A lot of people take umbrage with it. I can't remember if Jennifer Weiner hates the term or not.
She does. She says it sounds like a piece of bubble gum.
Yeah. Yes, it does. So, you know, the weight that it carries, obviously the term chick lit in itself kind of demeans the writing, I think. And so even though it's a full category that's been very successful monetarily, a lot of people don't want to be affiliated with it or would, you know, take issue with the fact that their book was labeled chick lit.
Well, we don't call books that have male protagonists who sleaze around and, like, are spies dicklet.
I thought of the same term as I was reading this. I was like, dicklet? That would be extremely boring.
It really would.
Even though that's what some of these books are.
Yes. Clive Cussler, I'm looking at you, buddy.
But yeah, she gets in trouble because she calls it out, right? She says it publicly, like, hey, dudes get more attention than women in publishing. The data doesn't lie. That is just true. And I don't think it has anything to do with who makes money. I would love to know how much money women make in publishing across the board compared to men.
Oh, that'd be fascinating.
I was looking for that piece of data and I could not find it. But once again, people don't want to associate success with money because that seems crass, blah, blah, blah.
And that is the three tiers of class. There's the avant-garde, which is high art. It's not about how much money you make from it. It's about the process of making this art.
There's supposedly some sort of purity to high art, untarnished by capitalist systems or the market or any other crude force that alters the art for what it ought to be in an ideal world.
So basically, like, totally snooty. Then you have mass cult, and this is entertainment that's just put out and can be understood by the lowest common denominator.
Bestsellers.
Yeah, bestsellers. Things like Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Or like the Marvel movies, these sort of blockbuster franchises. Everybody walks into the theater. Everybody sees the same movie. You might like it more or less than the person sitting next to you, but ultimately you all take away the same moral. It's not hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this thing that Anne Helen and other critics call mid-cult, right? And mid-cult is somewhere in between those two extremes. She writes, anything that makes you feel like you're doing something smart, but you're still pretty comfortable or unchallenged doing it, that's mid-cult.
Right.
Basically, what Anne Helen says is that chick lit tries to get pushed into mass cult to make it less valuable. Right. Or when it is in the sort of mid cult area, it gets labeled chick lit to try and take the power away from it, to make it less influential. And that this is ultimately a sexist thing to do. Like, it's happening because this is stuff written by women for women.
Right. Yeah. Right. And this is not a new thing by any stretch. Women's literature, ever since the novel came to be, right, has kind of been shoved in a drawer. You know, if you study 19th century literature, like Maria and I did, you learn that most of the books that were extremely popular in the 19th century that were read by the masses are books that most people today have never heard of, right? It was the things that people loved and adored that critics at the turn of the 20th century decided weren't valuable anymore. That those ideas were lowbrow, they weren't important, and usually they were domestic themes, like women writing about home life or family strife or things like that. Those critics decided that actually, let's just say Herman Melville was really great. And so he's going to be the person that we study now, which, you know, Herman Melville is great. But when he was publishing, nobody liked him. It was like he didn't exist. So There's a changing perception over time of what's good. And it just almost seems to be the case that women's literature tends to be the stuff that gets lost over time. Yeah. We begin to see that taste is so subjective. There's no standard today that will be applicable in 25 years because people change, society changes, taste changes. And so when Jennifer Weiner is screaming about women not getting their fair shake, it's because a certain taste is predominant, and right now it's not women, and it hasn't been for a very long time. So I loved that chapter. It was very relevant to a lot of the things that we talk about on this podcast.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. Oh, yeah. And also that chapter really tells us that Jonathan Franzen, famous for writing The Corrections, is a real dickhead.
But I knew that already.
I didn't. I was like, he was like, oh, I can't believe my book got picked by Oprah. That's so trashy. I just can't be associated with that. I'm not even going to go on her show.
That was kind of a famous rebuff, and people still don't understand that. I mean, just publishing in general needs money. If you're a writer and Oprah is offering to put her name on your book, you jump at it because it means you're immediately going to become a bestseller. Like, the end. It doesn't matter what she picks. So, I mean, while I was reading this and thinking about mid-cult, I was like, that's my sweet spot. That's kind of where I live. That's the kind of stuff I like.
My dream is to write a really good mid-cult book.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, if I write a book, it's going to be a mid-cult book. That's exactly what it's going to be. I'm not ashamed.
No, I would even write a mass cult book. I don't care. Did it get published? I'm down.
I love that conversation. The stuff that masquerades as simple or maybe shallow that really has a lot of meat to it. I love books like that.
Those were honestly two of my favorite chapters of the whole book. So the rest of this is like bonus time as far as I'm concerned.
Right. I was looking forward to the Kim Kardashian chapter and it definitely paid off. I adored it. I am not an apologizer for the Kardashians. I do watch their show occasionally, not regularly, just enough to keep up. But yeah, so I did catch a few of the episodes where Kim was pregnant, and I did catch the one where she was talking about how miserable she was being pregnant. Mm-hmm. And I really did love that episode because that is just not a take that you get very much outside of people that you know, right? Mm-hmm. Like friends who were willing to say, like, this sucks. I feel terrible. Or like having a baby was a nightmare for me. Like I've had friends that told me that, and I've never heard that said publicly. So the fact that Kim was able to get up there and have a crazy pregnancy and just get big with a baby was pretty crazy thing to do. Not that she could have helped it, but it was very surprising and revealing. And I loved that chapter.
I mean, I think that's what we're talking about for a second is the ways in which women cannot win.
Right.
If you say, hey, I hated being pregnant. All of a sudden, you're like a horrible person. Or if you're like, I ate deli meat while I was pregnant. People are like, oh, your baby gonna be dumb. If you fess up to not thinking motherhood is like the best thing that ever happened to you, our society is not okay with that conversation.
No.
Right?
No.
And so the fact that Kim was out there saying that is really kind of revolutionary.
Surprisingly, yes. And the way that Kim, as a public person, was kind of like the mother on steroids, I guess you could say, like the public mom on steroids. She was on display all the time in a way that pregnancy is always on display now. Like it wasn't in the 60s or the 50s when, say, my mother or my grandmother was pregnant. Like they didn't talk about pregnancy the way that they do today. The way that it's portrayed is very different and everybody feels like they have to stage their pregnancy. And in a way, it's become this public ceremony almost where people feel entitled to know everything about you and everything about your life as a pregnant person, which is very bizarre.
It's not just that you're pregnant and you can't hide it. It's if you're pregnant and you are drinking a Coke, people feel like they can weigh in on that.
Right.
It's really weird.
It is really weird. And that chapter could have gone on forever.
Yeah. There's a great quote about all this, and it says, when the body becomes public property, as the pregnant body has indubitably become, it not only liberates the populace at large to comment and cast judgment on it, but the male-dominated legislature to institute legal controls over it.
Yes, and we've talked about Susan Bordo's unbearable weight a lot on this podcast. Mostly during the Margaret Atwood section. But yeah, she points out that the female body is perceived by many to just be this public entity, right? That we don't have rights over what we do and that there are people who still ideologically, they feel like the woman who is capable of bearing a child does not own herself. And that's pretty frightening in times like ours to think about that prospect.
These are scary times for women's reproductive health. Unfortunately.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Actually, I realized I had read the Kim Kardashian chapter.
Really?
Before. It was published on either Jezebel or Bustle. And I had read it. And so when I was reading it again, I was like, this is very familiar. And then I realized that this is my second time through with it.
Right.
But I really liked it.
It did make me feel really bad for Kim Kardashian, which is not a thing I would ever say otherwise.
Well, the time she got mugged, I felt pretty
bad.
That's
true. That was pretty horrible. you know, she has signed up for a certain amount of public scrutiny. So there's always that argument. But mm-hmm. just the fact that literally one of the most beautiful women in the world can't do a pregnancy right is pretty upsetting. And it's not that she can't do it right, but that like it was perfectly right and normal, but everybody had ideas about what it was supposed to be. And that must have been a pretty hard time for her.
And I'm sure now she's getting flack for having a surrogate, too, even though both of her pregnancies were complex and complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It was just such a good chapter.
It was. It pointed out that even the most wealthy, beautiful women can't always win. Speaking of not ever being able to win, the Hillary Clinton chapter nearly broke me apart. It's still too soon for me.
I was so mad reading it. I was so angry.
Yeah, I shed a tear. The thing about Hillary is I'm a lot like Hillary. And I think that a lot of us felt like that. You know, maybe mm-hmm. we felt that she wasn't a sexy person, which she isn't. She never has been. She's not the most charismatic person. She is a worker. Like, she works her ass off and she gets things done and she's smart and she makes things happen. But that is not what people are looking for in a president, which is insane. And that whole section where it was talking about how Hillary was a bad candidate because she was a good listener, that nearly killed me, which is because it's true. Instead of screaming over her opponents, she listened and then had a smart comeback for everything. But that didn't matter to people.
The real depressing part of that is that you have to ask yourself, can a woman ever succeed? So, you know, Anne Helen talks about the fact that those debate skills tend to be coded male.
Right.
So when women use those tactics, they get labeled as too shrill or too combative. And so when she did it the way a woman would do it, listen and respond, like she just got talked over. If you're a woman, how are you going to have those debates in any sort of reasonable way? It's really depressing. It's so depressing.
It is depressing because it that question just is hard to evade. Like, can any woman do it? And I think that's what all of us were experiencing a year ago as we were sitting there thinking, well, she can't do it. Nobody can. Like, it felt really hopeless, and it still feels hopeless some days.
Yes, because I read an article where Joe Biden is thinking about running in 2020. And I'm like, no, I want a woman to run in 2020. But I am truly afraid that I am not going to see a female president in my lifetime. I really am.
Well, yeah. And we have these conversations about identity politics. And it's like, yes, we would like to move past identity politics, but we can't. Right? Because conversations like these, nobody's still having them. Nobody wants to admit why Hillary lost because it's too sad, right? It's not because she wasn't a better candidate, because she was. It was because she was a woman and she was a powerful woman and she scared people.
And she's smart and she's a hard worker. And you know, she already ran that White House.
Yep. Yes. And this isn't to say that the Clintons are perfect people. Obviously, they have flaws. They have things that they have done that are not worthy of praise, to say the least. But I mean, considering her opponent, that conversation seems moot.
But she had emails. God forbid.
But her emails.
So that was I will say that was a very emotionally hard chapter for me to read.
It was.
Nicki Minaj was my favorite chapter, but I think the Hillary Clinton one is probably the best. Really and truly, from a writing and argumentative standpoint, it's just phenomenally done. Everyone should read it.
They should. And it just cuts to the chase in a way that so many other people didn't want to. We still want to believe that we're in like a post-racial, post-sexist age, and we are not. Here's a really good quote. I mean, there were so many in this chapter. Clinton's treatment suggested a much larger cultural ill, one that had less to do with the specifics of her personality and much more to do with the enduring structures of patriarchy, structures that had bearing on more than just the woman standing on the stage asking you to vote for her. It was one thing to dislike Clinton. It was quite another to ignore how her treatment was symptomatic of deep-seated, if often well-camouflaged, misogyny. And I think that was the most painful line in the whole book because it was straight to the point. Like, Hillary Clinton lost because she was a woman. Yes, she was an imperfect candidate, but all of those things that were up against her were multiplied times 1,000 because she is a female. And there are still large swaths of people in this country who will never vote for a woman. No. And there are women who will never vote for a woman. It's a hard time. It's a hard time, guys, especially for the ladies.
White women, we got to talk to you for a second.
Yeah.
And get your shit together.
Yeah, that's on us. Like, we got a problem. We got lots of problems, actually.
I'm a punchy tonight. And it's just because, like, this book is so good, but it also makes me so mad.
I know. Me too.
Because a lot of these structures, you can't fight.
I mean, we can question them. We're doing that here, but it does feel like an uphill battle a lot of the time. Definitely. And that was one of the strengths of this book, is that it was truly intersectional, that Anne Helen talked not only about gender, but also about race. And that came up over.
So important.
It does. It is important. And it came up over and over again. And so props to you, Anne Helen, for not just writing about white women.
Because that's easy.
It is easy. Right.
I was very disappointed that we didn't get at least one smear of Gwyneth Paltrow. We kept waiting for it. It didn't come.
Yeah.
But I'll do it for you. Gwyneth Paltrow is a kook. Don't buy her weird tinfoil hat products. You can buy her cookbooks. Those are probably okay.
I don't know. I don't even know about that. Her vagina steaming sounds like a real winner of a product or whatever.
Do you remember when Jennifer Love Hewitt vajazzled and everybody made fun of her? But Gwyneth Paltrow steams her vagina like it's some pork dumpling.
It can't be healthy.
Everybody's fine with it.
Are there any chapters that you wish there had been that were not in this book?
That I wished were there. Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
Truly.
Yeah.
I think she's fantastic and definitely merits her own chapter.
Yeah, I agree. Everybody who knows me knows I love Lady Gaga.
The Golden Girls. I want a whole chapter on the Golden Girls.
The Golden Girls and Madonna chapter about being too old.
I didn't like the Madonna chapter. It's the only chapter I didn't like.
I mean, it was an interesting angle. Being too old was a good one. But the Golden Girls would have improved that subject for sure. I was thinking about Mindy Kaling. I would love a chapter on Mindy because she's not that unruly, but in other ways, she's quietly unruly. I think she would have made for a good chapter.
Yeah, the ways in which she sort of challenged romantic comedy with the Mindy Project would be really, really good.
Yep. And Helen, if you're listening, which you're not, Volume 2, Mindy Kaling and Lady Gaga. There you go.
And the Golden Girls.
And the Golden Girls.
Can we lead with the Golden Girls? They were women, older women, who were talking about the problems that face older womanhood living together.
It's true.
And, like, they could have men, they could not have men. Like, they were openly sexually interested in
men.
They
were having a lot of sex. Yep.
That's a fantastic show.
It is fantastic.
So, yeah, this, I'm ready for a volume 2. I hope Anne Helen's working on it right now.
Me too.
It's so good. I really hope you guys listening at home that if you haven't read the book, that you'll go pick it up. Or if you don't want to read the whole thing, that you'll at least go and read a couple of the chapters. I don't think you'll be sorry that you did it.
Mm-mm, definitely not.
So, Pixie, now that you've read this book about unruly women, what does it mean to you to be an unruly woman?
Well, so one of the questions on our Instagram that you set up was, what's your two?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought really hard about this because I could not narrow it down. I have so many twos. Right. Too loud, too fat, too obnoxious, too opinionated. Like, there are so many. But I think if I had to pick one, I would say too intimidating.
Okay.
Because I have had people tell me that in my life.
Really?
Yes, I have. You know, when they tell me that, I think they mean it kindly. Mm-hmm. What they're trying to say is, like, you have your life together. You're not a total mess. Like, I can take care of myself pretty well, maybe too independent. Yeah. So when they say I'm too intimidating, it's probably because I'm too ambitious or, like, I have too much going on and I don't tend to make room for people or make them feel needed. which is extremely difficult sometimes. Now that we have PhDs, they tend to kind of think that that is being a little showy. Have you had that experience? Like
in public, I get that a lot, right? Like the minute somebody figures out that I have a PhD, it gets weird.
Right.
Really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm constantly downplaying it in ways that our male colleagues don't.
Right.
But it's one of those things where, yeah, too intimidating. Absolutely. Right. And those letters after your name don't necessarily help with that perception. My two is too competitive. That has always 100% been the thing that people call me. Like, I'm not willing to be second best if there's any way possible for me to be first best. Like, I will fight for it. And I don't care who I have to beat to get there. Like, I've always been one that'll work harder and scrape harder to be just as good as any boy. I have always been admonished for being too competitive.
Right. And once again, these are qualities in men that are lauded, that are appreciated. Yeah. And women, we're not supposed to be them.
Yep. I mean, like, okay, I'll give you an example. I was playing Monopoly with my brother-in-law years and years ago, and he was like in middle school, and he wouldn't sell me property, and I was playing just like kind of half-heartedly, and when he wouldn't sell me a property, I doubled down hard and I bankrupted him in like 7 more turns. I was like, no one's having fun anymore. How dare you not give me what I want?
You get it where you can get it. I love it.
If he ever hears this, he'll be so mad, but
he won't. Yeah, we're okay.
So yeah, that's my two. We had a ton of people share their twos with us, more than we can even share in our podcast today.
Yep.
So that's both exciting and sad. So if you shared with us and you don't hear your response, it's not that we didn't read it. At LoloXXOO said that she's often labeled too serious. And she said, too serious is just a joke. No, it's not just a joke. If you're trying to demean my accomplishments in any way or assume that it was easier to get done because I'm a woman. I once planned a company-wide event for over 100 people, and it was said that, quote, you're used to it with kids, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Makes me so mad.
I know. Kristen at Booksish says, I think my word would be determined, only said with a patronizing tone because I'm asking people to also step up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you should go to our post on Instagram because she shared this big story afterwards about how, you know, she works really hard, but people were asking her to come in and work on Thanksgiving. And she's like, no, I'm not going to. And then the older women in the office were like, well, sometimes you just got to work.
Yeah. Usually when women stand up for themselves, it doesn't go over well.
At We Three Readers said that she's labeled too bossy. And she's like, nah, I just get stuff done. And Whitney at the Unread Shelf agreed, saying, I'm right there with you. I may be bossy, but I get it done. Don't complain.
And yes, bossy is one of those words that only seems to be applied to women. Like, mm-hmm. You don't hear men being called bossy all that often, if ever. They're called demanding. At Little Red Reader said, talkative, A-type, anxious. Does the list ever end? I can relate to that. I don't think so, but I don't let it bother me. And then she also has some really good advice about how to shrug it off. And she says, it's always good to talk to someone. That helps. Be also reminded that you are a good person. Practice self-care and always challenge any negative voices that pop up in your head. Good answer.
We have such great followers and listeners.
We do.
I'm always struck by that when we have these conversations. We appreciate you guys so much.
Yes, we do.
And we especially appreciated you when we asked our second question, which was, how do you define feminism? And that's a hard question.
Definitely.
We talked about this last episode and we had some really smart, good responses. So at Hilton Jenkins said, to me, feminism lies in the essence of choice, right to choose your clothing, be it a bikini or a burqa, or your career or anything else without being judged.
Very, very succinct. Catherine at Catnundrum said equality, respect, and freedom of choice. Boom.
And Georgina at Georgina Kane Author said, feminism is fighting to give women the same opportunities and fair treatment that men get. I've dealt with it all my life. I get called sweetie and honey at work while men get called sir. It sucks, but I stand up for myself and I've made a few men cry.
I love it.
She might be my spirit animal.
I love it, Georgina. We had one guy who, or one person who wrote it and said, feminism is cancer, which is not a helpful response. Okay. For one, it's ignorant in that it doesn't actually answer the question. And two, in that nothing is as bad as cancer.
But that brings up a really good discussion for us to have, which is, how do you have a conversation with someone who believes so differently than you, especially in terms of feminism? Like, how do you start to have a conversation with someone who thinks feminism is cancer?
Well, I think if you want to actually have a conversation, you have to start with an answer that actually argues a stance, which that opening remark did not. The conversation went a little bit further and people kind of probed this user. This I don't think this person probably listens to our podcast.
I guarantee you no.
But asked or, you know, suggested that he or she articulate that point a little bit more. And I think that our the people who interact with us did a good job of kind of encouraging that answer to come out. And basically, you know, the internet is full of people who want to have conversations and it's full of people who don't. And you can tell pretty quickly if that person wants to have a conversation. And I think we did have some words exchanged that were positive and some people you were not going to make headway with. Just try, if you actually do want to have a conversation, to present a statement that actually articulates a stance. That would be my recommendation.
The funniest part about that conversation to me, which you and another one of our misfits at 799 Books handled it so incredibly well, but it was so funny because one of their points was that, oh, well, people are just so emotional about feminism and you can't have a conversation with feminists because they get so emotional. And feminism is cancer is an emotional statement.
Totally. It's also just a phrase that someone's picked up somewhere and is repeating. I've heard that expression many, many times, and it carries absolutely no logical weight.
Part of me wishes that, like, if this were to happen in real life, I would have the balls to just, like, take my bra off and set it on fire and just, like, make eye contact while it just, like, and be like, you want to try this again?
One of the things that this question, you know, that I think it bears repeating from last week is that, you know, people think they have an idea of what feminism is, and generally they're wrong because feminism is multifaceted. There are many different strands of it. There are many different waves of it. And so when you say, like, feminism is A or feminism is B, you could be right, but you could also be really, really way off base because there are different people within the movement. It's an activism that has all sorts of viewpoints. And so people will argue about what it means to be a feminist, and it doesn't help to group everybody into one glob because chances are they all have different opinions about what it means to achieve women's equality.
And the thing is, that's okay.
Yes.
So we can still make progress and not necessarily agree on the minutiae of feminism, but still all believe that everyone should be equal.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was a very interesting conversation. It was an unexpected conversation to have pop up on our Instagram, but we're thankful for it.
Yep.
We're thankful for it because, you know, we want to hear opinions that are different, but we're really thankful for everyone who had a calm and productive conversation around it. So major snaps to you guys. Mm-hmm. You guys are great.
We love you guys.
And we especially love all of the women that you love who are unruly. That was our last question. And we had some good responses. So at 799 Books said that she loves Shirley Jackson. She refused to be the kind of person and the kind of author that everyone wanted her to be. And she never pulled any punches when it came to portraying the people around her. And 799 Books is writing a blog post on her very, very wonderful blog about Shirley Jackson that I am very excited to read.
Awesome. Paper Street Book said it's a fictional character, but Offred from The Handmaid's Tale, which we can have fictional heroines, right?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Of course we can.
Absolutely.
Nancy Drew is mine. She was not unruly, but like when I was a kid, I wanted to be Nancy Drew so hard. I wanted to solve mysteries and then go drink my milk and eat my little sandwiches.
What a nice life.
It's like, oh, this is a haunted ranch. No, not really. There's just some weirdo skulking around the ranch. I'm going to solve it with my two best friends.
I love it.
I'm going to have a boyfriend and we don't kiss, but that's fine.
Listen, I'm 30 something years old and I still think I'm going to grow up to be Veronica Mars. So, you know, we can dream.
And then Virginia at Virginia Foot said that she has a lot of favorite unruly women, but her favorite celebrity badass is Chrissy Teigen. She doesn't take crap from anybody and is 100% open about her flaws and insecurities. I wish more people in Hollywood would be that way. And her Twitter has me laughing out loud.
Chrissy Teigen is hilarious. She is legit hilarious. She's a very funny woman and smart. She trolls the president better than almost anyone. It's fantastic. I guess it comes to the portion of the show where we make more recommendations for books.
Yes. So if you liked Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud, you should read Bad Feminist by Roxane Gay. So good. It's a collection of essays by Roxane Gay, who is so fire right now. It's ridiculous. All of her stories are about feminism, but they're mostly about how Roxane Gay recognizes that she's kind of a bad feminist in the sense that, like, she doesn't know the history of feminism all that well. She enjoys things that other people might consider unfeminist, but she still very much so is a feminist in the sense that she wants equality and she fights for it. It's a perfect book for people who are new to feminism or people like the person who commented on our Instagram page who might not be aware of how multifaceted feminism can be. And she has a chapter in that book about her love of Scrabble that is one of the funniest things I've ever read in my whole life.
Follow Roxane Gay on Twitter immediately. If you do not, Difficult Women by her would also be a good one. And Hunger. Yeah. Just anything by Roxane Gay. So one book that I'm recommending, I have not read. Sorry. The Destruction of Hillary Clinton by Susan Bordeaux. I've already talked about Susan Bordeaux in this episode. We love her. She's a fantastic theorist. But this book came out this year and I'm going to recommend it just because it's on my to read list. And if you guys read it and tell me it's wonderful, I'll read it too. I'm going to read it anyway, but so that's that.
One more.
And the last rec that I've got is All Grown Up by Jamie Attenberg. Jamie Attenberg is a novelist. She's very fun. And I would say All Grown Up is a surprising book in that the main character is like 40-ish, single, hasn't gotten her life figured out, and she's pretty unruly in a lot of ways, but she's also very heartwarming, and the book is full of some really sophisticated, surprising moments. And I really enjoyed it. So All Grown Up by Jamie Attenberg.
So those are our recommendations. Go read them. You won't be disappointed.
Nope.
And that leads us to our December pick. And we decided to go with Turtles All the Way Down by John Green.
Yay!
I'm sure no one's heard of it. Might have trouble finding a copy.
John Green is the real deal. And he writes young adult literature. And it's literature. Do you want to read the synopsis?
Yeah. 16-year-old Asa never intended to pursue the mystery of fugitive billionaire Russell Pickett. But there's a $100,000 reward at stake. And her best and most fearless friend, Daisy, is eager to investigate. So together, they navigate the short distance and broad divides that separate them from Russell Pickett's son, Davis. Asa is trying. She is trying to be a good daughter, a good friend, a good student, and maybe even a good detective, while also living within the ever-tightening spiral of her own thoughts.
So it took John Green 5 years to write this book, or it's been 5 years since he put another book out. And part of the reason is that John struggles with his own kind of anxiety, and he worries and has this crisis when he thinks that his thoughts are outside of his own control. And so this story is based on that idea, like, how do you feel like yourself when you don't feel like you can even control your own mind, that your mind feels like something outside of you? And he talks about thought spirals and, you know, the way that anxiety is perceived in culture and also how it's experienced. So I feel like he takes on really, really difficult stuff with his books. And I'm super excited about reading this one, especially from someone who knows exactly what it's like to have anxiety.
Right. And when we started this book club, we made a commitment to each other that we wanted to read all sorts of books, but we also wanted to read diversely. And you don't see a lot of mental illness. I think this is a really important read from a diversity standpoint, too, because there's more to diversity than just gender and race.
Right. Yeah. So
yeah. Also, everybody's reading it. So
we figure a lot of you guys will get this book for Christmas, or you already have it. So or go to the library, reserve your copy, put your name on the list, and it'll probably take you 2 days to read it, tops.
You have a copy, right, Pixie?
I do have a copy. I have a signed copy. Mm-hmm. He came to town and we went to see him, and he and Hank did a show, and it was fantastic. And we got a tote bag and a poster and a book, and it was a fantastic night. So we're excited about that for December. Other things to be excited about for December is we're going to have a giveaway coming up. That'll be a first for us. Yay! And then we're going to have another giveaway in January related to our January pick, which you'll have to wait to hear about.
I think January might be a really special month for this podcast.
Yes, it will. We have some super special guests lined up. Experts in their field.
Yes, it's going to be so great.
It will be great. I'm really excited.
And with that, we are wrapping this up.
Yeah.
So remember to tell people about us. We rely on you. If you're enjoying the show, please spread the word. You guys are doing a great job of it. We really appreciate it, but we can use all the help we can get.
Subscribers, reviewers, we've got a rating on iTunes now, which is super, super nice. We got a new review from Daniel Steven, who's also been great on Twitter.
We've bonded.
Yeah.
Over Marvel movies.
So good. He wrote, "Even if I don't know the books being discussed, I still enjoy it. My personal favorite episodes have covered the Jurassic Park book. They say Michael Crichton doesn't write great dialogue, but I can forgive him for this. Overall, it's an A+ with lots of fun and some hilarious moments." So thank you, Daniel Steven. That was really nice.
You can also find us on Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and we are now on TuneIn Radio, too.
Ooh, okay.
Ooh, we're moving on up, little by little.
Yes, we are. You can follow us on social media. We're obsessed. Twitter at Misfit Book Club, Insta at Misfit Book Club. Believe it or not, Anne Helen left us some comments regarding our posts having to do with Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud. So that was pretty nice.
I screamed like a girl in public.
She is, if we haven't said this already, go follow her on Twitter as well. She's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can email us at misfitbookclubpodcast@gmail.com.
And we have a Facebook page. Yay! At Misfit Book Club. We'd love to see you there too. And you can always join us on Goodreads. Search for Misfit Book Club. That's our community page. But you can also friend us. If you use our email address, you can friend us. And we post little reviews and we are always commenting on the books that you guys want to read too. So, and yeah, that's the end. Hope you guys have a really, really good Thanksgiving if you're in the U.S.
Yeah. Be sure to share some of these really fantastic insights with your family.
Oh, yes. Oh, also, I posted a recipe for slutty brownies on Instagram. Feel free to bake them, take them to Thanksgiving, and tell your parents what they're called.
So good. Thank you, guys. We love you, and we will see you in December.
All right. Bye.
Bye.